Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and I'd like to welcome you to the DC Poetry Project's weekly open mic call-in show, where we celebrate the power of poetry. We'd like people to call in. The number is 646-716-8754. And as we do every week, we'd like to bring greetings to all of our listeners all over the world, our faithful listeners, and those who are joining us for the very first time. So again, this is the Power of Poetics, and it's our poetry and spoken word week, weekend, day, whatever you want to call it. So again, we're glad that you're here. You know, I'm feeling, just due to all the things that's happening in the world, I'm feeling relatively philosophical. So which puts me in a zen state of mind. So what I'd like to do is to start with a piece of poetry that's from a zen perspective. That's zen poetry. That's what we'll call it. So hold on 1 second while I find this. Hope everybody's doing okay out there in radio land, blog talk land. Of course, I can't find what I'm looking for, but that's okay. That's all right. We're still good. I'll read something differently. All right. Someone made the statement that what we can't face looks for us anyway. So a Zen saying is, we should never waste time with wholehearted attention. We should kind of think about that. Just ruminate over that. I want to bring someone on the line so we can get this show on the road. Hold on 1 second here. There's a lot going on in Blog Talk Land. All right. Good evening.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, Gary, how's it going there, my friend?
Going well.
Good, good, good. Good to hear your voice. Welcome, welcome, as you know, to the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show, our weekly poetry and spoken word extravaganza. So what's been happening in your world, my friend?
Oh, just working.
Just working?
Yeah. How was your holidays?
Oh, it was very nice, very nice. I had an opportunity to travel home to see my family for a bit and didn't stay long. But that was really, really well needed. So it was good to see them. What about yourself?
Everything was good. I had a little extra time off, and I enjoyed that. And like you said, with family and friends, it was a pleasure.
Yes, yeah, always important. Always important. Do you have any poetry you want to share, my friend? You want me to go first or whatever? Okay, go.
Yeah, I got this piece I just wrote.
Okay.
And I finished typing. It's called 3 inches. And 3,000 miles. As if we were kin, my desire to be with her matched her kindred spirit. Strong as steel magnolias, yet at the same time gentle as petals of ebony roses. Her wavy locks flowed freely alongside her regal cheekbones, resembling leafy limbs hanging from a weeping willow tree. I rest in the shadow of her shade whenever she's near me, quietly weeping my soul ache to touch and embrace her, caress her finesse. I long to bask happily ever after in her peaceful presence, and lie in the midst of her cool, natural, sweet fragrance. Her perfume penetrates my cortex and seep through the entertaining crevices of my mind, giving my thought process cerebral palsy. I pause every time she strolled in and out the avenues of my imagination. Mouth on mute, I literally whisper sweet nothings toward her ear. Inconspicuously, I wink, smile, blow kisses, and flirt with her, but she politely ignored my subtle advances. Still, I admire her beauty in the distance. Tempted by her attractive appeal, appeased, I'm seduced by what we could become as one. Watching my sexy fantasy teasingly slow dance in my daydream, my lust for her drips from the ledge of her crystal clear glossy lips like a sparkling waterfall down the sleek canal of her slender neck over the groove between soft boulders through a Grand Canyon view of her spectacular cleavage. As my passion for her rushed with the force of the mighty Mississippi to carelessly empty like a swirling vortex into her intimate pink sea, leaving me to drown helplessly in the dark, deep, mysterious depths of her sexuality, reaching out to her, love eludes me. She invades grips of my fingertips. Ever so close, yet my secret love is so far away. I'm alone and lonely, between 3 inches and 3,000 miles from paradise. Peace.
Again, you know, as usual, my friend, that was beautiful. Very lyrical. Again, you know, we always talk about our inspiration, so please share more about your story. What made you write that this morning?
Well, I wrote down the 3 inches and 3,000 miles, and I thought this is, you know, I don't know what, I can't remember what he prompted me to write that. And I said, I'm going to write a poem about it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't even know where I was going with it until I actually started writing it. And then I finished it, and I found out what America metaphorically represents.
Mm-hmm.
And after I discovered that, that's when it made all the more sense. But
right.
I was just metaphorically talking about my desires to be married. You know, sometimes you be so close, you think you find that one, and then yet it could be so far away.
Oh yeah. Well, I have the same desire to. Yeah, I've come close many times, and just something happened, blow it up, every single time, probably me. But this is one, as I said, I'm in a zen sort of frame of mind tonight where I need to be philosophical. And this is called, it doesn't have a title actually, The Flower Invites the Butterfly with No Mind. The butterfly visits the flower with no mind. The flower opens, the butterfly comes. The butterfly comes, the flower opens. I don't know others, others don't know me. But not knowing, we follow nature's course. The end. Now I'm trying to figure out in my own mind, what does that mean? I'm finding these pieces randomly.
Uh-huh.
Those last two lines. By not knowing, we follow nature's course.
And you don't know where you went. You know, you just, like I said, you just wrote that. It was out the.
Oh, did I write this?
Yes.
No. This is a poem from Zen Buddhist philosophy.
Oh.
So I didn't write it. No, I'm sure it was written probably thousands of years ago.
Oh.
No,
okay.
I'm just choosing these poems randomly as I go through this book, you know, just kind of trying to find peace and solace.
Oh. Okay.
So I think by that last line to me, as I kind of read through it, sometimes it's easier to have it in front of you. It's kind of like what you said, by not knowing, we follow nature's course. I mean, we can't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And no matter that you would like to know, yes, maybe many of us would like to know, but we just don't know. And that's just nature's course. Yeah, we've just got to follow the flow wherever it leads. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, sometimes we just don't know. I mean, in our ins and outs of life, we're trying to figure out. We so much want to know that every step, you know, our every move. We want someone to know because I don't think we as humans like to be taken by surprise.
No.
We expect us in a surprise. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So we always longing to know what's our next steps was out there. But like you said, that's impossible to know.
To determine. Mm-hmm. It is. You know, it's funny, one of the prompts that we had last week on this show, and I'm not sure we had an opportunity to listen to it or not, but it was called, "When was the last time, that life lied to me?" And hopefully the two people who were on last week are on again tonight so I can hear their works. But my piece is pretty much what you're saying about just not knowing and wanting to know and feeling like we should know. So I'd like to share that later on. But the prompt is, for anyone out there in the world who'd like to call in, when was the last time that life lied to you? That's the prompt. When was the last time that life lied to you? You know, so another one here, and I'll just read it because I'm just on this page. It states, "When all thoughts are exhausted, I slip into the woods and gather a pile of shepherd's purse. Blending with the wind, snow falls. Blending with the snow, the wind blows. By the hearth, I stretch out my legs, idling my time away, confined in this hut, counting the days. I find that February, too, has come and gone like a dream, like the middle of a stream making its way through the mossy crevices. I, too, quietly turn clear and transparent." That's going to take me a while to figure that one out. Any thoughts that you have on that? This is his name, or her name is Ryokan, Ryokan, and I think they're potentially out of India, I'm guessing. I like the lines, blending with this wind, snow falls. Blending with the snow, the wind blows. And it's kind of a back and forth play on words there a little bit.
Yeah.
You got another one? It's just you and I.
You said somebody. If somebody else was on the line, I hadn't.
Okay.
No, I hadn't. I'm not ready yet.
Okay, not a problem. You know, I've always got some anthology books here that I can read from. You know, the hour is about poetry, and whether it's Zen Buddhism or not, just having an opportunity to share those words with others is extremely important. So I'll find a few and keep reading. I think what we'll do is come back after this very short break, and we'll go from there. We are back, DZ Poetry Project's Open Mic Call-In Show. Poets and spoken artists, please call in and share your talent with us tonight. So again, what I'd like to do is just to read a piece that I'm, again, just scrolling through a book and finding whatever I can. So this is called "What I Heard in a Discount Department Store." And the writer, his name is David Budbill. Don't touch that. Stop your whining, too. Stop it. I mean it. You know I do. If you don't stop, I'll give you fucking something to cry about right here, and don't you think I won't either. And so she did. She slapped him across the face, and you could hear the snap of flesh against flesh halfway across the store. Then he wasn't whining anymore. Instead, he wept. His little body heaved and shivered and wept. He was 7 or 8. She may have been 30. Above her left breast, the pin said, "Nurse's aid." Now they walked hand in hand down the aisle, between the tables piled with tennis shoes and underpants and plastic bags of socks. "I told you I would. You knew I would. You can't get away with shit like that with me. You know you can't. You're not in school anymore. You're with your mother now. You can't get away with fucking murder here. But you can't get away with shit like that with me. Stop crying now, or I'll give you another little something like I did before. Stop that now. You better stop. That's better. That's a whole lot better. You know you can't do that with me. You're with your mother now." What you think, man?
I'm just picturing a mother and a child chastising her. And I wonder what made him write about, write about that.
He witnessed this in a store between a parent and her child.
As if he just recorded.
I don't know. Maybe he did.
What he saw, and I just wonder what made him, write. After witnessing that,
Oh yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. I mean. Well, there's belief, man, and I know I grew up with it. Spare the rod, spoil the child,
Yeah, that's true.
Can't do that too much anymore.
No. Because
I don't know if he had her arrested after that or not, Yeah, where I come from, the mom would have been applauded. Even to this day.
For real.
I'm trying to stay politically correct, because I don't want to go to jail, but I don't play that either.
that's a shame that you can't even chastise your child without the threat of somebody.
Yeah, that's true, man. Or the kid potentially lying on you at school saying that you did. I mean, the world is so topsy-turvy now, man. There's just no sense of I don't know. It just seems so strange, all this stuff that's going on around us. ISIS, Donald Trump, what's happening in Chicago, and I guess it's always been this way, but it just seems heightened right now,
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Well, here's another one, my friend. This is by a guy named Joseph Bruschak. And again, I'm just roaming through this book, picking out the first one that strikes me. There's no rhyme or reason. And some may jar some people, some may resonate with people, but it's all good because poetry is about sharing your story, your lived experience. Everybody's story is different. All right. "Half on the earth, half in the heart, the remedies for all things which grieve us wait for those who know the words to use to find them." Penobscot people used to make a medicine for cancer from mayapple. And South American people knew the quinine cure for malaria 1,000 years ago. But it's not just in the roots, the stems, the leaves, the thousand flowers, the healing lies. Half of it lies within the words the healer speaks. And when the final time has come for one to leave this earth, there are no cures, for death is only part of life, not a disease. Half on the earth, half in their heart, the remedies for all of our pains wait for the songs of healing.
What was the name of that?
Let's see. This particular one doesn't have a name. And I like that those lines about, and when the final time has come for one to leave this earth, there are no cures, for death is only part of life, not a disease. Okay, Langston Hughes wrote the following. It's called Dust Bowl, and he really focuses on the sensory images. The land wants me to come back to a handful of dust in autumn, to a raindrop in the palm of my hand in spring. The land wants me to come back to a broken song in October, to a snowbird on the wing. The land wants me to come back.
I wonder what inspired him to write that.
I don't know. The land wants me to come back. Well, maybe. What do you think?
Reckon he was wondering what he was talking about, you know, where.
Well, maybe. I know that he was from, or spent some time in North Carolina. I'm not sure whether he was from North Carolina. So if anybody's out there in Blog Talk Radio land, please call in and let me know. I could look it up on Wikipedia, but I am hosting a show right now. But maybe because he spent time in the South, you know, where there's a lot of land, and he just remembered his roots, that the land is beckoning him home, you know. Some people say that you can't go back home, but you can. Well, sometimes you can if you really want to.
All right.
Are you ready?
Oh.
I can share another one. I can share one that I've downloaded to the show tonight for us to play. You'd like me to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a piece called Wesley Snipes, I believe. And it's by Brian Lewis Saunders. Here we go.
All the cool people were living in a nice hotel. But they were getting evicted. And they only got to keep a small percent of the money they had in their safe. Because Wesley Snipes lived there too, and when he left, he owed a lot of money. And so the manager evicted everyone, keeping all of their money and jewelry, and just letting them have a little bit till she got paid back all that money from Wesley Snipes. I didn't get evicted. I got to move in a ground level floor, a room that was real nice. And when I was helping the manager clean up, we found Bob Johnson, a previous guest, dead and buried in the property. He was a traveling salesman, Gideon Bible seller, dealer, and it disappeared. All the people that were there then, the eyewitnesses, wouldn't talk about what happened, and they made a vow not to ever tell about what happened to the Gideon Bible dealer. They said, you just don't talk about these things today. And I said, but all this happened yesterday. And they said, don't worry about it.
That was Brian Lewis Saunders and his piece, Wesley Snipes. Do you think it makes a difference? You know, there he was in his poem, you know, yawning and, you know, seemingly kind of out of it.
To me it did.
What kind of difference did it make?
Well, it didn't feel like, you know, it felt like he was, like, unless he was purposely doing that, it just felt like he didn't have no passion for his piece, you know. He all yawning all through it and just, you know, it's And it really lost me to not focus on what he was saying that much, because, you know, I didn't feel like he was interested in it, so he didn't make me want to be interested in it.
Right. You know, I was wondering, too, you know, maybe as a writer, his best writing is done. Let's say that was the wee hours of the morning, and he just wanted to, you know, to jot it down on, you know, some kind of MPG or whatever so that he had it saved. And that's when he just, you know, that was his time to write. Now, we may have asked this question 1,000 times over the last couple of years or last 2 years. When is your best time to write? Or do you have one?
I think early in the morning when in the morning times when I'm in the morning, I would have to say in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah. In the morning, because I think I'm least distracted in the morning than I am at night.
Okay. Mhm. Yeah, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about Robert Frost and other people. Like, and I think I may have shared that my best time to do anything really is between 2 o'clock a.m. and 5. I don't know, something about those hours, you know, maybe because it's dark outside and it's dark in here, you know, I feel like I can get some stuff accomplished. Those are kind of my hours to be me. I don't have to be on. Well, here's a little longer one, my friend, and with everything that's happening around, it's by a woman, her name is Olga Angelina Garcia, and we'll play this piece, and will you be ready then?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take another little break here. We'll be back. This is the DC Poetry Project's Open Mic Call-In Show. Again, we're here every week, and we'd like you to call in. All right. But maybe we won't take a break. I think what we'll do is just continue on. What I'll do is to recite a piece back to this whole Zen way of being before we... Oh, man.
I can read this piece.
Okay, great, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
This piece I wrote in 2012, so it's some of the stuff is dated that's in it at the time. It's called In the Air, I Can Feel It. A sense of urgency dominates the atmosphere. High terrors alert. To concerned citizens in the air, at most, it's fear. For I can feel it. Spiritual and physical warfare. Satan won't fight fair. Using deception, temptation, and chemical warfare. Abroad, Iran head leader secretly attempts to make a warhead nuclear, and not clear if the CIA or Pakistan still secretly assist the Taliban. The Afghans don't understand the UN's plan, nor do they give a damn. All they want is foreign troops out of their homeland. In Syria, Syria's rebels rebel, bombs bursting in air. Damn it, I can feel it. Banners flying. Stars tangled in mouth-to-mouth combat. Campaigning on political trails. Subjects are mangled. Verbs twisted. The truth badly miscommunicated. Words become strewed and misconstructed. In negative ads on air, airing dirty men's underwear and bad businessmen's practices while patrons listen. The newly insured refuse to thank president, and troops aren't paying attention. Blinded by multicolored flags flying in the Olympic-sized arena, too busy looking for the next gold medalist, a lightning bolt, or a 16-year-old flying squirrel, or a hard-to-catch fish named Felt. With Big Ben ticking and the whole world in London, it's easy to see other countries in need of help. As frustrated Americans abandon the American dream, referring to sleep on welfare, Social Security, and disabilities. Congress further disabled the U.S. economy, debating already established constitutional civil liberties like Obamacare. Some Republicans rather risk dying than paying for affordable health care. With the stench of death in the air, I can feel it. See, we live in a sick society when a sick-minded, thick skinhead opened fire, killing six in a sick temple. or on a dark night in a crowded theater, waiting for the rise of the Dark Knight, a wannabe Dark Knight goes on a shooting rampage, trapping the innocent. Even Batman can save him. Oh, what a dark night. Curiosity on Mars, questions abound in the air. I can feel it. Random, senseless act of violence aren't so random, or are they? Are we a reprobate nation, vain in our imagination, hearts darkened, worshiping the creature more than the creator? Full of vile deceits and affection, corruptible men, unchanged by the glory of an incorruptible being. Christian families refuse to stone modern families, climbing broke-back mountains, but instead they let the Sandusky use their rocks to reveal Sodom and Gomorrah. Slowly the land of the free become the home of all unrighteousness. Heat waves, droughts, wildfires, floods, the Midwest need a thundering shower. Rain, change, hope, fear, sadly, despair. Yes, damn it, I can definitely feel it in the air. Yet, in the wake of all this darkness, riding on a white horse, someday or some night will return a true white night of light. Some don't believe it, but I can definitely feel it.
You know, I think you've shared that before, and there were so many parts of it that really stood out to me. Let me see, what's the one that I heard tonight that reminded me that I'd heard it before? I guess about the one about the Jerry Sandusky piece. That's one line that stood out to me. You know,
as I was reading it, I was really, you know, it's still, some of that stuff is still so relevant. You know, that was, I wrote that in 2012, and, you know, instead of, they still, that people are watching in London, because what happened in the London subway not too long ago, and then in Paris, you know, it's still like it's just a continuing cycle.
That's what, yeah, I mean, that's so true. It does seem that way. Like I said again, I mean, you just, again, back to never knowing what's going to happen next. You just don't know.
Oh, just don't know.
Well, this poem is called Jammed, Crammed, and Damned, and it's by Anne Harrington. Emotions piled in a corner, one on top of another. Stuffed in, crammed, jammed, heaped high, overlooked, too busy to get to, like days old or is it years old laundry in a too small hamper. Smelly, soiled, discarded, embarrassing, a blight in an otherwise well-ordered room. The lid won't shut. I cram them in. A fruit spill on the floor, a stray gray, a raging red, a simmering burnt orange, a withholding white. Don't mix the colors with the whites. Wash in cold water. Do not add bleach. Warranted revealed manufacturer's defects. Emotions, mostly contained, put away, waiting over there in the corner.
Wow.
And what she said about this piece, and I won't read all of it, she said, Jam, Cram, Damn was a unique experience for me. It was one of the first term poems I'd ever written and was the first to capture a glimpse of the private side of me. It helped me think about how I repress or avoid difficult feelings. By owning these feelings, writing them down, speaking them out loud to a group, and hearing members of the group affirm the truth of these words in their lives, I felt the therapeutic power of the poem. I felt that by the end of the process, I was already a little different. She said, one of the things that surprises me about poetry is that it can help me access deeper levels of understanding and awareness. While this doesn't always happen, or all the time, I may write down some word or phrase or line that provides an insight I wasn't conscious of. Poetry is a part of my life now. And this is taken from John Fox's book, The Healing Art of Poem Making. I mean, to me, that's true.
That's what I was about to ask you. Do you think poetry is a part of your life now?
Oh, man. I mean, like you would not believe. I mean, over the course of the last 25 years since I started this thing, it's just been so intertwined with who I am as a person. You know, it's only now that I'm realizing that poetry does not define me. I define me, if that makes sense.
Well,
I'm not a poem. I'm a man.
Let me ask you this. In what ways positively do poetry affect your life?
Okay. That's a very good question. I don't think anyone has ever asked that in all this time. I think poetry has allowed me an opportunity to look deep inside myself, to really wrestle with the rawness of who I am as an individual. As I call it, as I spew forth these words, whatever bile that is inside me, in quotes, is able to come out. And I can feel as if I've, quote, regurgitated all that negativity, all those years of depression and sadness or whatever it is, I can get it out of me and put it on paper or spread it through the air through my words. I think poetry has provided me with an opportunity to grow stronger, too. Because prior to learning how to recite and learning how to put myself out there in front of people, I was relatively shy. I didn't feel as if I had a true voice. But poetry gave me an opportunity to express myself and talk about issues that I potentially otherwise would not talk about. Social, racial, religious issues that I wouldn't have really talked about in that kind of form out in front of people like that, per se. So I think it provided me that. It also provided me with a sense of solace when I've gone through so much in terms of health situations and other crises. Just being able to go back to the power of words, whether words that I produced or words that were produced by others, helped provide a sense of solace, a comfort. I think it's finally, poetry has helped me in my life from an academic perspective that while I was a professor at Oregon State University, I was tenured on the power of poetry to assist students and others develop empathy in relationships. So in all of my classes, I recited poems, man, primarily my own, and I've used myself as a living canvas for people to talk about issues. I call it a vicarious experience because they could listen to me share and they could develop their own theoretical orientations about working with other people through the power of poetry and through my words and through my body movements and stuff like that. Does that answer your question? Man, I guess I needed to say that. I've never really articulated it like that before. I'm sure there are a whole bunch of other things that help me do too. What about yourself?
And it so many. It's like you said that I can't just give that in a short answer because, I mean, I've seen the growth from where I started. It helped me to communicate verbally. It has educated me, allowed me to, you know, because some of the stuff that I wrote about, I had to research, and so it gave me knowledge and insight to other people's perspective, other cultures, other things, you know, that I wouldn't have probably never even would have thought about or hadn't about even, when the really, I ain't going to say not thought about, but hadn't went that deep into it if I didn't have to literally research, you know, because when I write about something, I want to speak the truth, especially it helped me to discover that how much I embrace our history as Black people. And when I write a lot of commentaries or research, and so it helped me to learn, you know, taught me things that I probably it helps me to help me in a way that has been like therapy for me to vent, to express myself, to get it out, you know. And then it helped me, like I said, to grow spiritually, emotionally. It helps me to not bottle up, to release as a release, but to grow spiritually because it helps me to look caused me to examine myself, reach deep down in myself, and honestly write, whether I like it or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Just has helped me in so many areas, in so many ways, and I thank God for helping me, for giving me the gift first of all, and I thank by my pastor for helping me to discover it, and then just I met a lot of people because of poetry.
Oh yeah.
That has really inspired me, or I learned from, taught me. It's so instrumental in my life that it ain't just in one aspect. It has helped me in so many ways. So.
Oh yeah, I agree with that 100%. You couldn't have said it better. I agree with that 100%. All those things you said, that's exactly what it does and has done for me as well. I'm going to see if I can take a little musical break here. Then we'll come back and continue. This is DePaul Poetics, and we'll be right back.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
My name is Michael Ingram. I'm here with Gary Malone, and we're just shooting the breeze, sharing poetry, talking about life. Any comments from you, Gary, in terms of what we're doing tonight? Excuse me.
It's always a pleasure to, to come on, and I always enjoyed your show and everything. I look forward to it. So, it's a wonderful experience, and I really enjoyed it the hour time.
Right. Well, I always enjoy having you with me, my friend. I really do. You, Kofi, and Valerie are like family on this show now, so it's always good to have you here. I think I'll be able to pull up this young woman's poem, and it's called Poem in Protest. Her name is Olga Angelina Garcia, and it's kind of a long one, but I think it's one that's quite timely. Let's see. Okay. Let's see. Come on, Olga. Come on now. Don't fail on me now. You remember that song, Feet Don't Fail Me Now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Olga... Okay, do you have another poem, man, that you can share? I can find another one. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll share that one that we were supposed to talk about tonight in terms of the prompt. When was the last time life lied to me? How does that sound?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right, okay. See if I find that. Man, it's been one of them days. Okay. Okay, here it is. Okay. The last time life lied to me, and this, again, this is, you know how I am about my stuff. I don't write stuff that often, but since I was the one who made up the prompt, I felt I'd better go ahead and do it. And I just did it today. The last time life lied to me, it sat alone in the stands and watched as I boxed with a new day. Life was my trainer. My guide, my rock through many, many defeats. Throughout our years together, it gladly taught me how to stick and move, bob and weave, and play possum in the ring. Yet life had lied to me. I knew that it was prone to make plans without my permission. So it had set me up to fight another battle. Despite its promise that I could rest gently and stay warm for a while. You see, I was still tired from a hard-fought battle that had only ended at 11:59 p.m. It ended because I fell to the canvas and screamed, "No mas." Yet, life had booked another fight, a fight that would start immediately, with or without me. I received its 12 a.m. call and the "I'm really sorry, but..." So there was no time to prepare or train for the much-anticipated battle royale. So I was unprepared for my newly born opponent, its strength, its unpredictability, and its power to pack an infamous Muhammad Ali-like 24-hour punch. Yes, life, my friend, my trainer, my guide, had held back the truth. It had lied to me. It had arranged for me to live so that I could fight another day. The end. You still there?
Yeah, I'm just reading. I was thinking, yeah, I'm still here. Yeah. Life lied to you.
Well, do you see how it lied to me?
Sum that up.
Hmm?
Sum it up in a nutshell.
Okay, that every day is a new day. So if life lied to me that I thought that I had finished fighting at the end of that day, but it had arranged another battle for me for the next day. You see what I'm saying? So every 24 hours, it was a new day. So I'd gone through the day thinking, whew, I finally made it. I'm home. You know, I fought, I bobbed, I weaved, I, you know, did the rope-a-dope. I made it through. And I'm resting in my bed, and then at 12 o'clock a.m., life's calling again saying, "Hey, it's time to get up. We got to go fight again."
So would that be much of a lie, more of a what you should be expected, unless you...
Well, I don't know. I guess when I say life lied to me, I thought I'd have a day to rest, where I wouldn't need to get up the next day and go bob and weave and, you know, fall on the canvas. Yeah. You know, that I had a good day. You see what I'm saying? So maybe I was hoping that the next day, or that I could kind of revel in that good day for a while, and that would last me a couple of other days, you know, through a couple of other days before I had to get back out there and put my boxing gloves on again and start fighting. And what I say is that my opponent, let's see, so I was unprepared for my newly born opponent. So newly born, that's the rising of a new day. It's brand new. It had no history. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know its strength. So there was an unpredictability about it because I didn't know what was going to come. But I knew that it had the power to pack a punch like Muhammad Ali did in 24 hours. I guess it sounds better when I'm saying it than it does. I was reading it. But like I said again, that's the last time life lied to me.
I was just thinking, you know, so much was going through my mind. I was saying no, and I was thinking, when has life lied to me? And I was thinking, I can't really say if life ever lied to me.
Well, that's a beautiful thing to be able to say.
Well, I mean, the reason I said it because the only, because I wake up with expectations.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm expecting, but so I can say it like this: the only time life lied to me is a day I won't know nothing about it. Why? You know why?
Mm-mm.
It'll be the day I die.
So are you saying then that life would have promise you that you'd continue on and then you'd die anyway?
Yeah.
Well, that's deep, too.
I mean, if you think about it, nobody wakes up expecting, you know, to die.
No, they don't. You know, I was thinking too that I had thought about writing, but I got another piece on this. I could have said that as a black man, life lied to me the day I woke up, the day that I was born.
Okay, yeah, from that perspective, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, because
things are going to be equal, and, you know, we'll be able to be free and not walk around, you know. And, you know, I'm going to say, I live in a complex, and whenever there's a white female coming into my building at night, I'll always, and this is like a natural thing, I'll always hang back just a little while to allow her to go in, because I don't want to walk up on her behind her coming in the building. Now, I don't know. It's just like a natural thing. I'm like, look, just hang back, let her get in the building, and then you go. Now, I don't know why that is. Why should I, as a black man, and it's my own stuff, I mean, I don't have to do this way, but what has been ingrained in me to say, hang back, Mike? You see what I'm saying? Don't,
because you don't want to be even the chance of getting caught up if mistakenly something happened. You know, something happened to her as she entered that building like this or whatever. And so you just know this is your precautionary measure to stay. You know, just let her. You know what I'm saying?
But would a white guy say the same thing? Would a white guy do that?
I don't know, but I'm just saying it. But you know. I just look at it from the society type of society that we live in. You know, people prejudge us because we have experience. I don't think, especially at our age, because we have experienced racism firsthand, we try to go out of our way, even subtly, to avoid it if we can.
Right.
If we can. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If we could do it. Sometimes it comes to us, the racism comes to us, and we don't be unexpected, we don't be bothered, we be minding our own business. But if we could foresee it, we try to, like, you know, we ain't going to put ourselves in that predicament to even let it be, you know, to be even
a suspect.
For a suspect, yeah, exactly, yeah. So we just, like, you know. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I pay my rent here, too, so I really have no reason, you know what I'm saying, to hang back. You know, but
hey,
like you said again,
once again,
just from the vantage point of not wanting to even have that in the realm of possibility, I just wait. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it ain't no problem that I wait, but I was just thinking about this the other night. Like, why do I automatically wait as a black man? I guess I already know why I automatically wait as a black man. But the thing is, why should I have to? But then again, I don't have to. So it's just kind of like a conundrum. You know what I'm saying?
But you don't have to. But once again, it's a precautionary measure that we sometimes subconsciously take, because I've experienced racism firsthand. You know, like for instance. That is what I was going to say. One time, I was going my way to church, and there was this Mexican, and I didn't know, all I thought it was a white body, laying on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around, I saw the body, and I didn't know the guy thought it was dead. I didn't think nothing about it, because I'm dressed for church and everything on my way. Anyway, I turned around, And I looked at him, and it was a man. I didn't touch him, didn't bother him or nothing. He looked, he could have been dead for as I was concerned. I got on my cell phone, I called 911 and operated at the dispatcher answered. It was a young white girl, one young white lady, put it that way. And I asked, I told her that I was where I was at, and I told her what I had. You know, this man, and she's that is on the side of the road, and he appears dead. You know, and she said, okay. She said, I told her I was on my way to church and I was in a hurry. He said, well, just hold tight for a minute. An officer's on the way. And then the officer, she said, okay, she said, all officers en route on there. I said, so I can go now? She said, yes. But before I can get in my car, before I can pull off, the officer pulled up. And I told him, I'm finna, he said, no, hold up, wait. And I said, why? He said, just hold up. And he went over there and he reached to grab the man, shook him, and he woke up. He was just drunk, passed out. He handcuffed him. And then that's when he told me I could leave. You know, after that point, after he seen, but it pissed me off because, you know, what if I had a pulled on? What if the man had been dead? What if I had a pulled on? And then he think, I don't know, he, you know, kidding me for a possible hit and run because there were no witnesses. You know what I'm saying? Other than, right. You know, whatever, you know, he could have said I hit and ran, you know, killed. You know, I could have hit him and I ran or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I would have been in a situation just being an innocent bystander trying to help this person. If that person had been dead, that whole thing, I could be, that whole situation could have turned very, you know. I said to myself, I won't do that again. You know, was it because I was black? Reason he, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, but maybe was that standard for, but the dispatcher told me that I can leave. You know, she told him, and
right.
I told her what I did. But the officer, you know, he was a white officer. He got there, and this one, you know, and I was like, so what I'm trying to say is we are conditioned sometimes because of certain, not only that incident, just even this one, especially when it comes to seeing police or when I'm in alone with a white female in a not so comfortable situation, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm very guarded. You know, and I think it's because it's what we can be accused of.
Yeah. Because that situation could have gone either way. You could have said, well, he wants me to stay here because he wants to know whether, well, I guess this is what you said, whether you were somehow involved or not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because you get pulled off. But then you could also say he wants you to stay there because he didn't trust you. You know what I'm talking about?
Hey, well, yeah, either way you go, he didn't. He don't know. I think he wanted me to stay there because if the guy had been dead, he wanted to question me.
Yeah.
Now, I took it out, I'd have been a suspect. You know, pretty much. You know, and no, it wasn't no blood stains or nothing on my. But I just didn't like that. How that whole because you know even when we now especially even before. For us as a black man to get stopped by police, it's a different experience for a middle-aged white woman.
Right. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, and we can get stopped speeding for the same thing. I mean, we can get stopped for the same thing, speeding, but it's a whole different. They handle the whole different approach. It's different for us. A different experience for us than it would be for that white lady.
Very much so. Well, my friend, on that note, we've reached the end of this hour. We've got about 25 seconds left. I think we've covered a lot of ground tonight, like we always do. So I'd like to say thank you for being with me. I got some big plans coming up in the new year. As you know, we need to talk about that. Now that I won't go into that. But Good night, everybody, and have a blessed week.
You too, Mike. Good night.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.